We are joined by Virginia State champion head football coach Lauren Johnson, who's a head football coach at Highland Springs. Coach Johnson played college football at Virginia Tech, went on and played in NFL Europe in arena football, began his coaching career as a graduate assistant at Virginia Tech, and then moved on to the high school level. His team has been in the state championship the last 4 years, and they've won it 3 in a row. And their record over that time is 54-4. Coach, you guys have been doing an excellent job, so we're really excited to have you here on the podcast.
Thank you very much, man. I'm excited to be here and just talk a little football today. I'm extremely excited.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about that background before we get into what you guys are currently doing and how you're excelling on the field. Tell us a little bit about, you know, making that transition from playing at the highest levels to becoming a coach and serving the game in a different way.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Miami, Florida, and kind of before we get started, I graduated from Miramar High School, which is in Broward County, and mm-hmm. they got an issue going on that happened at one of the local high schools. So I wanted to share my prayers and thoughts with any of those coaches that might be listening. It was actually the coach on the Stoneman Douglas staff that kind of gave his life and protected some of those kids there.
Yes.
So just wanted to just give a little shout out to them and just know that, you know, their prayers and thoughts are with them. But coming from Miami, Florida, I had the opportunity to go to several schools, and I ended up at Virginia Tech. So I graduated from Virginia Tech in the spring of 99, which I thought was a successful career. Didn't have very many opportunities to play NFL ball or kind of pursue it on the highest level, which was always my dream. So from my understanding, there was a local coach in the Blacksburg area, in the Roanoke, Blacksburg area, named Tony Hart, that asked the current defensive coordinator, Bud Foster, hey, do you got any guys? You have any guys that are kind of hanging around that still want to be involved with football and will possibly like to coach high school ball? And, you know, I was there. It was the fall of 2000. I was working with Virginia Tech in a multitude of capacities, but I had the flexibility and the time to kind of help this high school out a little bit. So I went over to Lower Bottetot High School in Daleville, Virginia. And I kind of got the bug from there. So in between there, I did some stops at NFL Europe, like you mentioned earlier, arena football. But in the fall of 2001, I got back over to Lower Bottetot High School again, coached the second season with a different head coach. And then the opportunities and life just kind of start going in different directions. And trying to work out for NFL teams in the fall of 2002 while coaching those kids really wasn't working out. Playing arena football was kind of interesting, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do. So I just kind of stayed where I was and kind of focused on becoming a head football high school coach. And becoming a head coach had its own experiences in itself. So I was an assistant in 2001, an assistant in 2002 at the high school level. And in 2003, I applied for a head coaching job, and I got it at Stonewall Jackson High School in Manassas, Virginia. And then the ball started rolling from there. So from 2003 to 2017, it's been a wild ride, but it's been an exciting ride, and I'm enjoying the process all the way through.
Coach, I know when we first start our coaching career, it's different, man. It's different walking out on that field. I remember, you know, my first experiences with it. You come out there for the first time, you play the game, and you got all these eyes on you. And, you know, now you got to coach them up. And, you know, thinking back to those early days of your coaching, you know, what's a mistake you made as a coach and what did you learn from it?
Probably the biggest mistake is allowing – there are two mistakes. I got to give you two. The first one is allowing the passion that I have for the game to overtake me and almost feel like I was still in the game, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of great things when you're fresh out of college. You kind of see the game at a slower pace on the high school level, which allows you to make adjustments, allows you to be a decent coach at a young age. But then the passion that I had for the game almost made me feel like I was still in the game. So kind of the drawing back and forth that I did when I was in college, being a defensive back with receivers, I found myself doing that with high school kids. And I wasn't too much older than them. Like some of those guys were 17, and I was 21, 22 years old. There's a five-year gap, but you kind of got to keep yourself, you know, at bay. You got to understand what's going on. And then kind of the discussion with other coaches, being a young coach, having discussions with other coaches, thinking that your way is the right way. So I learned from great coaches, you know, Frank Beamer, you know, Bud Foster, Lou West was my defensive back coach. In college, I thought those guys were great. But the way that they were doing it wasn't always the best way to do it with some high school kids who didn't possess the same talent and attributes as the guys did in college. So I had to kind of take a step back, look at what we were doing, and find out what best fit the kids that are in high school, not what best fit Coach Johnson, who played at Virginia Tech. So I had to slow myself down and look at it from a different perspective and have a little bit more balance in the way that I had conversations with the coaches, as opposed to jawing back and forth with them. I had to kind of listen to what they were saying because they were more seasoned on the high school level and I wasn't at the time. Mm-hmm. So those were two major mistakes that I made early on in my career that by no means do I even get involved with at this point in time.
Coach, when we look at the game today, and it hasn't hit your state yet, it's hit right next to it in Maryland and three other states around the country where, you know, they're calling for a ban for youth football, and legislators are. And obviously there's issues with that, but, you know, we obviously need good coaches. Regardless of what happens with legislation or not, we need good coaches to come into the game and stick with it because it takes some time. You know that, you know, for you, the adjustment and learning those things didn't happen overnight. What advice do you have to the young coach that would help them really, you know, grow and be able to stay in this game and make a major contribution to the game and how it's able to help young men?
Well, I think the number one thing is something that we deal with in numerous parts of life. It's what do you value? And I think there's a value that's placed on football. Me growing up in South Florida, there was value placed on it. Me being at Virginia Tech, value placed on it. And now in my place, we try to put an extreme amount of value on the game of football. And I think what legislators need to understand is that what they see as value is different than what the guys that are in the game see as value. I have two sons, one 12 and one 10, and they enjoy the game. But the lessons that they learn outside of what is being taught in their home is more than valuable than anything else that they're going to get in life, I think. Now, they're going to get some great education. They're going to get a lot of lessons, life lessons from mom and dad. But what their coaches are teaching them on a Friday evening or Wednesday night when they're at practice or Saturday afternoon at the game trumps any other lesson that's out there socially. You know, I'd rather my sons be playing ball than scrolling through Twitter or scrolling through Instagram or any other social media that's out there. I'd rather them be participating with friends and building relationships and learning how to solve problems. So, you know, it's in Maryland. I see the legislation. I read an article about it earlier today. It's disheartening. But young coaches have to understand the value of the game and place a value on it for themselves. It kind of gets a little skewed when you're looking at Texas and those guys are getting big paychecks or Georgia and they're getting big paychecks. The value of the game is much more than just getting paid for it. The lesson that I learned from my high school football coach in South Florida, Mark Gondolo, is they last with me today, and they last with me forever. So if I was talking to a young coach and I was trying to instruct a young coach, place a value on it. In our program, we want to build men, and the game of football is the vehicle that allows us to do so. We want men to come back to our community and our society and be adders, not takers. We want them to be producers, not just consumers. And if we can get them to understand that, and we do that by playing the game of football, then we've not only made our community better, but we can make our country better. And I think that's what we're trying to do on a small scale here. Maybe one day it'll be on a bigger scale. But understand the value. When you understand the value of it, you take it seriously, you understand it more, and you put yourself in a position where you want to learn more and you want to increase your knowledge of the game. Anybody in a room with a bunch of football books, but if there's no understanding that comes out of those books for the people that are reading them, then there's no knowledge being gained. So we want coaches, I want my young coaches that are on staff to kind of gain some knowledge about the game, understand where the game has come from, where it's at right now in the current state, and where people are trying to take it if we allow them to take it there. And we got to place major value on what we do.
Coach, let's get into you know, what you guys are doing at your program, and obviously you're having a lot of success. And just listening to you talk here at the beginning, I'm sure you place a ton of value on the culture that you're building and probably attribute that to your success as much as you would what you guys do out on the field. Talk to us a little bit about how you've developed the culture at Highland Springs High School.
Well, I think our culture is built on inclusion, it's built on relationships, and it's built on mental preparation. And that's on and off the field. There's a quote that I like from Homer Wright says, through the power of the mind, we can control our destiny. So we put a lot of focus on the mental aspect of the game and the mental aspect of our community. Like what are we showing the young kids that go to the elementary schools and the middle schools that feed into our school? Like, how are we forming and shaping their mindset, and how are we forming and shaping their ideas about our program? So when young men walk through the door, they understand that they're here for a purpose and not just to play a game. There's an end goal that this vehicle is going to take them to. So we try our best to make sure that our kids are consistent, they're transparent, that they're vision-based, and that they're, again, gaining understanding of our community and our clientele. That's more coaches and players, but we want to make sure, you know, kids understand that what you know, you hold on to, and what you don't know, you kind of let it go. What I mean when I say that is, I tell our coaches on a regular basis, explain what it's like to be a man to our players. Explain your position-specific drills. Explain your position-specific requirements for the week based on the opponent that we're playing. And then go back now. Once you explain it, make sure they have complete knowledge and understanding of it before we get to the field or before they go home and they're dealing with a situation or some circumstances that may cause them to make a poor decision. We want the information to be like a 15-play drive when they get it. And what I mean by that is saying we want to give it to them sometimes in small chunks. We want to make sure when we're building our culture, sometimes we give it to them in big chunks, and those big chunks result in the first down. We don't ever want to go backwards. We want to just continue to go forward. So it's a 15-play drive, 99 yards. You know, we score, and we get a two-point conversion at the end of it. We want to make sure that we're giving them small chunks, big chunks. There's some excitement in the deal. We're getting the crowd riled up. Everybody that plays football understands, like, how those long drives work. But we want to make sure we give it to our kids in bits and pieces that they can understand and that they can now translate and relay it to a younger brother, a younger cousin, somebody else that may be coming through our program 4 or 5 years down the road. And it's based on what the coaches think and how the coaches react, and it's based on what the players know and the knowledge that they have so they can go out and disseminate it throughout our community.
Coach, when relating it to the 15-play drive, you know, some of those drives that even result in a score might have some lost yardage plays along the way. So how do you handle those situations, whether it's with individuals or maybe a group or even at times your team, where you don't maybe have the buy-in or alignment or the action that you need from those guys that keeps your culture moving forward to, you know, to the end result, which is getting your team, getting your program over the goal line?
I think the way we handle the best is just me spend a little time to getting away from it. Here recently in our program, you know, I called a team meeting, and we meet a lot as a team, you know, talking about transparency, and we're sharing, I'm sharing as the head football coach, or the coaches are sharing as assistants, what we see coming out of the kids at this point in time. It's kind of a little lull in between seasons right now, you know, before we get to our spring training and our spring preparation. We're in the weight room and we're working, but there's some things that I see that are not indicative of our program. And I think those things need to be addressed immediately. We need to have immediate reactions to what's going on and not letting anything fester or foster over a long period of time. So what we do is when we have setbacks, we address it as a group at that point in time. My father was good at doing that when I was growing up. When he had an issue, we addressed it immediately. We didn't wait a week, 2 days. My mom didn't wait until my dad got home. She addressed it. And then my dad addressed it again. And I felt like it was overkill, but now I see it as a parent. It's right where we need to be. I see it as a coach. My parents were doing exactly what they needed to do to keep me on track. So to keep our players on track, we discuss issues, whether it be the way we're talking about women, how we're handling ourselves in the classroom, you know, how we're wearing our pants in the community. You know, we address those things immediately. And we do it in a variety of ways, whether it's me putting my hand on your shoulder and talking to you, or if it's in a large group, or if it's me calling you on the telephone or sending you a text. You know, we try to exemplify who we are at all times. And to do so, we got to hold ourselves accountable, and we got a 24-hour do right rule. You know, you got to do it all the time. So we discuss those things, and we talk about those things every day of our lives if we have an opportunity to.
Coach, obviously, the attention to detail is coming through in a lot of the things you're saying here. And you mentioned, you know, the attention to detail in your preparation for what you're doing on the field. So, you know, before you get your team out on the field, what do you feel is some of the best things you guys do, you know, in those classroom settings or film room settings or even walkthroughs that prepares your guys to excel on the field?
It goes back to my preparation or my development as a player. My mentor is Dwayne Joseph. He works for the Philadelphia Eagles right now, and they just won the Super Bowl. But I can remember Dwayne telling me, he played at Syracuse, played at the local high school in my area, but I can remember him telling me when I was 15 years old and he was 20 years old, he'd take me out to work defensive back drills. You know, you got to crawl before you can walk, and then you got to walk before you can run. So our implementation of how we do things in our program is based on that formula. We're going to put it on the board. We're going to ask some kids to get up on the board. We're going to ask them to draw it. We're going to ask them to explain their thoughts, their perceptions, the way they perceive things while we're running the play, while we're asking them to do certain things in the community. And then after we do that, we're going to ask them to walk through it. You know, and when you talk about things off the field, give them an opportunity to read about Habitat for Humanity or read about something in the environment that's either faith-based or that's community-based that's going to help the community grow or help them grow. And then when we're talking about, you know, installing plays or getting ready for our offense or our defense or the opponent that we're going to play, you know, sometimes we go out without a football, you know, and people think we're crazy for doing it, but we want to make sure they have great understanding of where they need to be, great understanding of the concept that we're trying to run offensively or their run fits on the defensive side of the ball. So we go out there, we want to focus on assignment and alignment. And that's something that my high school coach talked about a lot, and it may seem old school to some people, but as soon as we get out, we're just going to walk through these plays and make sure we take what we learned on the board and then apply it to actually walking through it. And then when we ask them to run through it, we want them to run through it with a vengeance and make sure they're doing it at a high pace, at a high tempo, and they're doing it correctly. But once they have understanding and great knowledge about what they're doing, after they walk through, after they crawl through it, then walk through it, now we're expecting them to run through it and run through it as fast as they possibly can. So we may even get out and we may bird dog steps for 15 minutes, and then we may walk another 15 minutes through those same plays that we bird dog at the beginning of a play. You know, we want to make sure the first step is going the right direction and no false steps, and everybody's moving forward, whether you're on the defense side of the ball and we're trying to reset the line of scrimmage, or we're on the offensive side of the ball and we're trying to reset the line of scrimmage. We want to make sure that everybody's first step is going in the right direction at all times.
Yeah, I haven't heard that term for a while. I think back in my early days was coaching wing T, and we did bird dogs all the time. So bird dogs, for those guys out there who don't know what it is, it's simply taking your first step. So when everybody takes their first step, you freeze it, and you should see everybody going in the direction that they're supposed to be. It's, a great tool in seeing if these guys really know what their assignment is. Coach, let's talk a little bit in general about your offense and the defense that you guys run. What kind of offense do you guys employ?
Keith, we're multiple set. We're based out of the spread. But every time I look down the sideline, I got kids that don't fit the spread. We got to find a way to get them on the field. So we're multiple. We're 10 personnel, 4 wide receivers, 1 running back. We can be 20 personnel, 2 running backs, 3 receivers. We can be 12 personnel, 2 tight ends, 3 receivers, 1 running back, which people call ace. So we try to do a lot of different things. And then we try to find out what we do best in those sets. And then we try to, you know, we try to smoke and mirror you sometimes and be as good as we possibly can by doing a couple different things with movement and transitioning, but running the same plays and executing them the best we possibly can. And on the defense side of the ball, we're bastardized 4-2-5. There's a lot of principles from Bud Foster's 4-4 in there. And our defensive coordinator, he played at UVA. So there's a lot of 4-3 principles from his coaches there. And then at times, because of necessity, you know, we've not had a lot of linemen in the program. We've had to move to a 3-3-5 and hard stack and a 3-4 in my tenured period of the school that I'm at right now in Highland Springs. So what we did is we found a 4-2-5 try to mix it up as much as we possibly can. Added a lot of principles from a lot of different defenses in there. And we've kind of come up with our own 4-2-5 scheme that has worked great for us. You know, our defense this year only gave up, you know, 12 points a game, if I'm not mistaken. And the year before in the state championship run in 2016, we had 7 shutouts. So Coach Simmons and those guys are doing a great job on defense, but we've kind of made our own defense to kind of fit us. But the number one principle on the defense side of the ball, the kids are running to the ball, and when they get there, you know, you better get there with some with a sense of urgency.
And Coach, going back to what you said on the offensive side, obviously you're looking to build it around the personnel that you have. That being said, is there a play or a concept that you guys like to hang your hat on?
Inside zone is one that we love a lot, and it's been very, very good for us. And with the, I guess even before, you know, people start calling it RPOs, we were kind of doing it, you know, in 2009 and 2008. And if somebody was doing it then, you know, we weren't aware of it because social media hadn't hit, and maybe there wasn't a lot of videos on it and stuff like that. But we running inside zone and throwing the bubble has been very, very good for us, getting the ball in our athletes' hands and kind of taking that one extra defender and just reading them. You know, the way the game is, you want to get as many double teams as possible. And we can do so up front by just some base blocking and climbing to the next level and securing linebackers and then reading that defensive end. And then when teams get a little tricky, you know, take the linebacker outside, you know, and they try to send that defense in across your face and kind of block down on that guy and do what we need to do. But we've done it multiple ways. We run it with 3 wide receivers. We run it with a tight end and 2 receivers to the same side. We run it out of balance set. We run it out of unbalanced set. We try our best to find a way to get the inside zone downhill, running straight ahead. And I think our offensive linemen like it a lot. You know, they can just kind of get back to just being bullies or trying to be bullies and push people around up front. And sometimes people have been better at it than us, but for the most part, our kids have done a great job at just, you know, locking onto a guy, driving straight ahead, giving us an opportunity to create a new line of scrimmage. And when people kind of, you know, try to fill the box up with 9 guys in the box or 8 guys in the box, we're able to get some of our athletes one-on-one with linebackers or corners and put ourselves in position to be pretty good. So inside zone with a lot of pass options off of it has been very, very good for us.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about this run you guys have put together here over the last 4 years. 4 times in a row in the big game in the state championship. You've won the last 3, 54-4 during that time frame. What was it that took you guys to this level where, I mean, you are amongst the elite, you guys are doing it better than anybody, and you're keeping it there at that high level of performance, of excellence?
All right, so I will be remiss not to say this. So we were in it 3 years, and we won it all 3 years. We missed the opportunity to be there in 2014. So 2015, 16, and 17, we're in the big game, and we had an opportunity to do it. But I think, you know, it goes back to those same things of building a culture. You know, we want to be consistent. Again, transparent, vision-based. I remember an older coach on the staff with me before saying, hey, man, we shouldn't talk about, you know, the state championship. But I think for my players in this format where we are right now, we had to give them a vision. We had to allow them to see it. We had to give them an opportunity to understand what it's like to be there. And then, you know, once we got the taste, so the taste is in the kids' mouth right now, and now they're working. And their work ethic is being demonstrated in a lot of different ways, but they're working to get back to that goal. I mean, we're not guaranteed to get there. We know the opponents that are here in the state of Virginia are working extremely hard to knock us off the so-called pedestal that we're on. But we're humble enough to understand that, you know, a lot of things have to go right for us to be in a position to be successful. So by no means are we counting our eggs before they hatch, but we definitely have an idea or a thought of where we want to be come the month of December. And we felt like, you know, the last couple of years we've been pretty good in the playoffs. We're 15-0 in the last 3 years in the playoffs. And to do so, you know, you got to have a lot of things go right. So the work ethic that the kids are putting in the weight room, the work ethic that they're putting out in the field, you know, driving the sleds, pulling the sleds, throwing the ball on their own, it's coming to fruition, you know, when we get to the football season in the month of August. And then it's carrying us all the way over, you know, to the month of December. So the kids are doing a great job of, again, you know, adhering to the status that's been set. And it took a while for us to get there. It wasn't something that happened overnight. But now that it's there, the kids have a great taste of it, a grand taste of it, and they want to get back year after year.
Coach, what do you see as the biggest challenge to getting back there in 2018?
The biggest challenge is not defeating ourselves. And I think that's big for a lot of football programs. I've heard it several times, and my coaches said, I've heard other coaches said, that team wasn't better than us. We beat ourselves. So we hang our hat on, you know, one of the few teams that can beat us is Highland Springs. You know, and thank God we have the opportunity to change that day after day and week after week. We know that if we go out and we execute and we put ourselves in position, we can be successful. So we try our best not to inflate ourselves during this off-season period of time, keep some humility in what we're doing, understand that there's constant competition, whether you're racing your mother to the mailbox to get the mail first, or if you're playing your buddy online in Madden football. We want you to compete. We want you to play multiple sports so you understand the feeling of competition. You know, when you're a basketball player and you're not the star basketball player, but you're the star football player and you're sitting on the end of the bench, you gain another level of respect for the game. You know, if you play basketball and you play football and you're pretty good at it, and then you come back and you're playing baseball and you're not the starter and you never get off the bench unless you're the designated hitter, then you have a newfound respect for the event. So we ask our kids to compete and play multiple sports. Right now, if I'm not mistaken, we run indoor track in the state of Virginia. We got about 17 guys that are running indoor track. And then we got about 6 or 7 guys that are wrestling. And we got 3 or 4 guys that are playing basketball. So we're asking our players to compete day in and day out in multiple sports in the classroom, or if they're not doing anything sport-wise, in the weight room. So we want to make sure to give ourselves a chance that we're competing at all times and we're not inflating ourselves bigger than what we are. We know there's a lot of work to get back to where we are. And the 2018 football team didn't win the state championship. The 2017 football team did. The 2016 football team did. And 2015, those guys did. Those are 3 different football teams than what we'll be in 2018.
Coach, I commend you for that outlook on the multiple sport athlete. I think it's so important for the development of our athletes. Like you said, not just in terms of what they're doing athletically, but their development as a competitor. I would always tell guys when I was a high school head coach, like, you know, hey, I can give you, you know, maybe 4.5 or 5 hours in the weight room, and I'm going to do my best to make it competitive for you guys, but there's nothing like being out there on the court or on a baseball field or on the track where you have to go against somebody and there's a winner and a loser every time you do it. I think there's so much to be said for developing competitors, and obviously those kinds of things are paying off for you guys on the field.
Absolutely. We've even had guys that played tennis, and they were both the #1 tennis players at our school, and they went on to, you know, participate in the state tournament and things like that. So I encourage any coach that's listening, young or old, to allow your kids to participate in different sports. It's not going to hurt them. You know, they'll be able to get gains in the weight room. And those kids did that for us. They still gained in the weight room. We maxed out on power clean here Tuesday of this week. And we had 99% of our team, even the guys that play basketball, even the guys that are wrestling, even the guys that are running indoor track, gained 10 pounds or more on their power clean. So on the power clean max. So those guys are still competing and gaining strength in the weight room. It's about sitting down with the other coaches and building a culture not only within your football program, but in your school that's beneficial for the kids that are participating in multiple sports. We encourage it. We want it. I think it just helps your entire school become better when you got kids across the board that are participating in multiple sports. And it's definitely helped our football program here at Highland Springs.
Coach, as you look back at you know, the last 3 years here where you've played all the way to the end of the season, what have you learned about getting your team that deep? Certainly a lot is going to, you know, motivate those guys, be exciting for them. But, you know, as coaches, I think we've learned a lot about how maybe we need to make sure that physically those guys are in top shape heading into that last game. How do you approach that as you get through, you know, these longer seasons?
Well, so we 45 games in a 3-year period of time. It's not a lot of people that can say that, right? And there are some other people in our state that can say it. So what we found is we have to take a day. We got to take a day and have a mental recovery day. As we get later in the season, on Mondays, we've gotten to the point where we don't even go out on the field. We may lift, we may run, but then we just may just do some mental stuff in the classroom and allow the guys to recover. Or we give them a video. We become very fond of Inky Johnson. You know, he's giving some motivational stuff. Guy played at Tennessee. Some other guys that are out there doing some motivational stuff. We just try to pour into them as much as we possibly can late in the season on Monday. And then we still come back on Thursday and have kind of a jog-through type deal. We don't call it a walk-through at our place because they take the word literally nowadays. So we may have a jog-through with the kids and kind of teach them a couple different things and make sure they understand where they need to do, what they need to do and where they need to be. And in doing so, it's helped us out. You know, we kind of take the pads off sometimes. You know, if it in the month of December in the state of Virginia, you can have some different weather. So when it's been warm, we definitely allow them to take some equipment off, kind of run around a little bit, just kind of be loose, free, and enjoy the period of time. But when those days have been colder, when it's been cold days, you know, we kind of dress it up a little bit differently. We keep the jogging pants on, sweatpants, and just try to keep them warm and keep them from getting sick. So we try to do a multitude of things to make sure that they're in a situation where they can recover. You know, the excitement of winning a quarterfinal game and then a semifinal game and playing in the state championship game, you kind of got to taper back a little bit and give them an opportunity to recover mentally and physically. But I think it's more mental than it is anything else.
Definitely, Coach. Well, you've shared some great ideas with us here today, and you're doing a ton in your program to help your guys both on and off the field. But if I were to ask you, pick one thing, just one thing that you feel really gives your team the winning edge, what would that be?
Wow. That's a tough one, Keith. One thing, I'll say this. This has been very, very important for us. You know, everybody wants a leader in their program. Sometimes you get a group of guys and there's no clear-cut leader. Something that I believe, and I believe strongly, is when you start the season with no clear leadership, for whatever the reason may be in your program, maybe you're young, maybe the seniors are not very vocal, whatever the situation is, you and your staff have to be the leaders. You and your staff have to be the first guys out on the football field. You and your staff have to lead the guys through warm-up by actually doing it. And it helps, you know, as you get older, your body gets stiff on you, get tight, you know, stretching a little bit, doing a dynamic warm-up doesn't hurt every once in a while. And it's not necessarily just kind of huddling up as a group and talking amongst coaches why your strength coach or the one coach that's designated to lead stretches the guys. It's almost doing it with them so they can see what it's supposed to be like and how it's supposed to be done. And we were in that situation at the early part of last year where the coaches had to run through, you know, a couple bag drills to show the kids what's going on and get a little sweaty, get a little dirty, go through calisthenics so our leadership can develop. Now we feel like our leadership is very, very good. We can kind of walk away. But it took a little bit of time to get them where they needed to be. You know, sometimes as coaches, we scream at them and we want them to be leaders, but they don't know how to be leaders. They may not have seen it or had a mentor or talked to anybody or read a book on leadership. So if we know it, and as coaches, we need to show it. And I think that's what we did or what we've done here the last couple of years when there's been a little lull in leadership or maybe it's kind of been a little down or the guy that you expect to be a leader isn't necessarily showing it. And we talk about it and we discuss it, but putting it into action is tougher for some kids. And I think when it is, as coaches, we got to step up to the plate and we have to be the leaders when there are no leaders. And that means getting down and dirty and into the thick of it so the kids actually see what you want done and then they can actually lead in an impactful way.
Coach, great stuff here today. I'm sure some of our listeners are going to want to know a little bit more about the things you do. What's a good way for them to connect with you?
The greatest way for me is through email. My email here at the school is pretty long, so I'll say it a couple times. It's LC Johnson @Henrico, which is spelled H-E-N-R-I-C-O lcjohnson@k12.va for the state of Virginia, .us. So it's lcjohnson@henrico.k12.va.us. I had an opportunity to speak at a Glazer clinic here recently, and I spoke with a guy from Indiana.
Kyle Ralph. Yep, he's been on the podcast.
Kyle and I had a great time.
Awesome.
Yep, we had a great time, and Kyle's a great guy, and I'm glad I met him. So I'm interested in doing any talking, sharing any information, having a good time with guys that want to get better and grow the sport of football like USA Football is trying to do.
Coach, really appreciate your time. Best of luck to you and the team in 2018, and thank you for all you're doing for the game.
Thank you very much, Keith, for having me. I appreciate it.